Welcome everyone to this week's Total Rugby League show, and joining me here at League Express Towers, we're joined once again by Mr. Matthew Shaw from Rugby League World. From League Express himself, it's Mr. Marty Sadler.
Good morning, Ben.
So, hello everybody and welcome to the show. Super League Roundup coming up very shortly. Plus, this week we're going to be talking to Warrington Wolves' very own Stefan Ratchford will be joining us. You went to see him a couple of weeks ago, didn't you? To
award
his Albert Goldthorpe medal. And,
that's right, yeah.
Good egg. Very good egg.
Very, very nice guy.
And
a very good player as well.
Yes, there is that too, Martin. Yeah. And we'll be catching up with him shortly. But there is really only one place we can start, and here at League Express Towers, we listen to Talk Sport, so you don't have to. And the Sean Edwards saga continues, Matthew. And it is a bit of a saga now. It's a bit farcical in many ways. I mean, what's your take on it?
It's not a saga, it's a shambles. It's a disgrace, to be honest, from both sides of the party. Let's start with Sean Edwards. Sometimes, as media outlets, we can get frustrated that there's no transparency. No one's willing to speak. But this is a very unique situation where someone is speaking and there's actually even less transparency than there would be if he wasn't speaking. And some of the comments have been just utterly disrespectful to Wigan, in my opinion. Starting with the whether I do a couple of years at Wigan or whatever. What does that mean? What does that mean? That just comes across as, if I can't be bothered doing anything else, I might go there.
Wouldn't you say, Matthew, that now, you know, given everything that's happening, Wigan probably wouldn't want him anymore, surely?
No, I mean, for me, yeah. his place at the club is untenable.
Yeah, he's ruled himself out, effectively.
If you look at the fan reaction, the fans are saying they don't want him in.
No.
If he doesn't treat our club with respect, if he doesn't care, then...
The thing is that when they announced it last year, it was a massive coup for the club, or it appeared to be, didn't it? They said Sean Edwards will be the coach from 2020 after signing a 3-year contract. We assumed that meant that the contract had already been signed, but it seems that what they probably meant was he would sign one, you know, and after signing it, he would be the coach of the club. But... it clearly doesn't seem to have signed one, and clearly he's having second thoughts. Now, you know, frankly, if you offer a job to somebody in that way and make a massive thing about it, and you get the fans excited by what they think is going to unfold, but then the guy backtracks, then you've got to say, I'm afraid that's, you know, we'll go and get somebody else.
I mean, the other side to this was, coming into this week on Monday, I think we all read the Wigan statement, with our jaws a bit of gas, really, going, is that it? We'll try and get hold of the fans. As the week's gone on, I think many people are starting to feel a bit sorry for Wigan in all this.
No. For a few reasons. Wigan Warriors are perceived to be, maybe not in this country, but globally, one of the biggest clubs in Super League. Some people are the biggest club. Some will argue Leeds.
Mm.
But... I'd say in Australia, Wigan is seen as...
Wigan's the name, isn't it?
The
Wigan's
club.
The brand.
So, when a coach who has agreed or has signed a 3-year deal says, whether I do a year at Wigan or whatever, you come out and set the record straight. Mm. He's signed a deal. He's coming. They didn't do that. Ian Lenigan sort of went, you know what he's like.
Mm.
Brushed it off. Then he said something again, and he refused to comment. Now, a press statement comes out where there's no comment from Ian Lenigan. There's no comment from Chris Radlinski. Feel sorry for the media manager, who's probably said, we need to do something, but they haven't wanted to say anything. Now, why wouldn't
But that wasn't what they needed to do,
no,
was it, really?
Why won't Ian Lenigan or Chris Radlinski come out and say, Sean Edwards has signed a 3-year deal? Mm. Why did they just not say that?
Because I assume he hasn't done so, but I think they gave a false impression. I mean,
they signed a three-year deal.
They said after signing a 3-year deal, he will become the coach of Wigan. What I think they might say now is that after signing implied that it hadn't yet been signed.
Oh, come on.
Well, yeah, but that's the only thing I can think of. Because
he unveiled him as the next head coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming in 2020.
Isn't it bad, though, that on Wednesday, a couple of days after that statement, we are still none the wiser about...
Oh, exactly. Of course it is.
But the statement was basically... Well, it came across to me as they'd left a few phone calls with him, he'd not replied, and they'd left him a voicemail, and they hoped that he'd answer the phone.
But
in
the fact is that Wigan appear to have been disingenuous about this right from the start. Don't they? You know, they appear to have been disingenuous about it.
Could it not be a verbal agreement? In which case, isn't that?
They said he'd signed, though. They said he'd signed a 3-year deal. So for me, yes, they have been disingenuous, because if he hasn't signed a 3-year deal, why won't Wigan just come out and say he has signed a 3-year deal?
Well, because he obviously hasn't.
So exactly. So this is what I'm saying.
You know, that's the point.
But why on earth? Why on earth did they say he had? Left themselves in this position themselves.
I mean, it's becoming a bit abundantly clear that Sean Edwards, you know, sometimes his phone goes to voicemail and that kind of thing. What are Wigan actually saying, I'm assuming?
They're not saying anything.
Well, Wigan, if they've got any sense, will now start looking elsewhere, either looking with Adrian Lamb to keep him on next year if things improve there, of course, because, you know, the way the results have been going, they might not want to extend Lamb's deal. And Lamb might not want to extend it. Who knows? We've not spoken to him about that. But it must be quite disconcerting for him and for everybody at Wigan. I mean, it looked like a coup when Wigan announced it, didn't it? You know, Edwards was going to come after the World Cup this year and come back to his spiritual home at Wigan. It looked a perfect scenario for the club. But the trouble is, when you do that sort of thing, there's always so much that can go wrong, particularly when you're dealing with an enigmatic character like Sean Edwards. He's not a normal guy, really. We saw during his playing career that he wasn't a normal individual. A very, very, you know, some very unpredictable person, I would say, which was, you know, part of his part of his sort of baggage as a player. You know, and he fell out with quite a lot of people during his career. But, you know, it just seems to me that he's having offers from elsewhere now in rugby union, which, frankly, are probably far greater financially for him than coming back to rugby league.
It does look
and with less risk,
it
actually.
It does look like he has to leave that role he's got at Wales, because they've already started appointing him.
Yes, they have, yeah.
Can I put a different slant on it? Think you're one of the players at Wigan. You're watching all this unfold. No one has a clue what's going on. The guy who's supposed to be coaching you next year is making your club look ridiculous. He comes across in everything he said, he doesn't want to be at Wigan. So if you were one of the players now, would you want Sean Edwards to be your coach next year?
No, of course not.
Because I'd be looking at him thinking, this guy don't want to be here. This guy doesn't think that we're good enough for him. Get lost. Don't want him there. I would not want him to be my coach. Absolutely no way.
Mm.
I mean, just to go on the pitch matters, like we said there about the players, it's not looking too bright at the moment for Wigan on the pitch. It's not really clicking, is it? I mean, that defeat to Warrington.
Well, it was hardly unexpected, was it? That defeat. And Wigan, I thought, played quite well in the second half and came back into the game. So Wigan are not losing games by enormous margins, are they? You know, you know, things started going wrong for them after the World Club Challenge when they lost that Golden Point game to Hull. And since then, they've not really had any... I mean, they lost to London by 2 points. They've not really had any staggering defeats.
There is going to be a problem, though, isn't there? Because they are a club ticking over. They have been ticking over since Wayne left.
Problem with Wigan. They can't seem to keep hold of their top talent for long, the exception being Sean O'Loughlin. Bateman's gone, Sutton's gone, Williams is going. They've kept the wingers. Will they stay forever? I don't know. Charnley went. The players don't stay anymore.
Well, the great loss was Bateman, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course.
And we saw that, you know, on Sunday when he played for the Canberra Raiders at the Gold Coast and did magnificently, I thought. I think he made over 150-odd metres. And got 2 points, you know, in the vote for the Dally M medal, which is quite remarkable for a debutant. So, you know, he was outstanding. Everybody over there realises he is. I mean, with Bateman, of course, he went to Canberra Raiders on the understanding that he would eventually come back to Wigan. But, you know, that again might be a bit of a fantasy, really.
Well, but Bateman's already clarified this.
Yeah.
Bateman has already said, know that they made it out he was coming back in 3 years' time. And Bateman's already come out and said, no, that's not the case. If I want to come back, I can come back on that deal.
But
so they weren't really
telling
the truth.
The comments he's making now about Canberra suggest that he is very happy they would like to stay there.
It's crazy.
Where do Wigan go from here? Because it is looking a bit...
I don't know. Because they're going to lose
Williams. Someone desperately needs to grab the club by the scruff of the neck, don't they?
They're going to lose Williams at the end of the year. They don't seem to know who the coach is going to be. Adrian Lamb, as of now, things could turn around. But as of now, has he done enough to take the job long term? Absolutely
not.
Well,
Adrian Lamb, when he was appointed, if you recall, said that he was going to change Wigan's style of play. But it might not be easy to do that until the warmer weather came. Quite interesting now. The warmer weather, you know, by the look of it, is just starting to come. We, at the end of this month, the clocks go forward. And, you know, that's always the harbinger of summer, isn't it? So this, I mean, when you say where do Wigan go from here? Well, in the short term, they go to Salford on Sunday, which is another testing game for them. But it's just the sort of game that Wigan might win, I would think. You know, Salford have been high-flying, very... very unlucky, you know, to not come out with a bit more at Castleford. So Wigan will be a big threat to Salford.
Just a point, Wigan and Flair. It was said in the press that it was Adrian Lamb who wanted Jared Sammet in. Well, that's just not worked as it stands. He said that they were going to play with Flair. They only three teams have scored fewer points than they have this season.
Now, well, they've only got a points difference of minus 16.
Yeah, because
and that's with five defeats in six games. That's not a, you know, they've not been losing games by that
it's
much.
It's functional rather than
but,
flair.
Yeah. But that's kind of irrelevant, isn't it? Because if you lose every game by 2 points, you might have one of the more average points difference going. But if you finish bottom of the league,
but what what it tends to show is that your performance is better than your results. And, you know, some coaches say they're more interested in performance than results. I've never believed that. I always think results are what count. But you know, it's certainly possible to make out a case for saying that, you know, Wigan have shown some bright points this season so far, including in the game at Warrington, but not enough of them.
I was going to ask you, because I asked you a similar question last week about the Leeds-London match. Mm. What happens if Wigan get beat by Salford?
Well, they're down 2 points. I mean, the really interesting thing is that if you look at the table now, you've got Wigan, Leeds and Huddersfield all on 2 points. Collectively, they're 4 points behind the ninth place team, which actually is London Broncos. So they're falling behind at the moment, and they can't afford to fall behind much more, can they? Now that's really quite important.
Now, that's a good chunk of the show dedicated to Wigan there, and I'm sure there's going to be more news on this. TotalRL.com, obviously the place to keep clicking F5 on in the next 48 hours or so. But we mentioned Leeds there. Leeds 16, London Broncos 18. And I did ask the question last week to Martin Matthew, if what happens if London beat Leeds? And they did.
Leeds are in crisis.
Can we come up with a better catchphrase? That's all for 40-20. Show that. We can do our own T-shirts. We don't have to have Leeds on crisis on it. Come.
Leeds are in a very, very... Well, no, what I want to say is would be rude and you'd bleep it out. So.
And the fact is...
Peril?
We'll go with peril.
Leeds are not playing to their potential. The disappointing thing for Leeds is that they've made some big recruits, some quite big name recruits, and given marquee contracts to two Australian players who are not yet producing the goods consistently for them. I mean, I think Trent Merrin probably had a better game on Friday night than some of the games he's had. But he's still not breaking any pots, I don't think, for Leeds. And, you know, Conrad Harrell, you know, had a great game. I think his first game was probably his best game, wasn't it? And, you know, since, if you remember that opening game at Warrington when Leeds, you know, were quite competitive and Harrell looked pretty threatening at times. But I don't think he's come on from that.
I thought Harrell was Leeds' best player on Friday.
Yeah. Well, you saw the game and I didn't. Yeah. So, I may be harsh in criticising him.
I think they're using him as a battering ram. What they're using him as, it's like under-8s rugby. If you're on your own try line, it's all give the ball to Conrad. And he'll make 15 metres.
little insight that's into Matthew's school life there.
That's yeah.
Although I wasn't the person who was given the ball. I was the one who they didn't give the ball to. But that for me is all they're really using him for at the minute. He isn't the greatest defender. That's been on show this year, I think. I don't think he's a horrific defender, but he's not the best defender. He's very good in yardage. I don't think they've given him the service with the ball to show what he can do near the line, to be honest. So I think the Hurrell criticism is probably a shade harsh. Merrin played his best game on Friday. Lolla here for me is not a halfback. He's a fullback being asked to play halfback.
Yeah.
And I don't see that changing.
Where does David Ferner go from here? Because the post-match press conference was...
Was a good one.
It was a good one.
He came out fighting. Yeah. I like that.
He's very eloquent. He's very eloquent, is David Ferner. Very intelligent guy. He expresses himself well and you know, is quite good at sort of expressing the sort of rationale of what he's trying to do with a club. You know, he comes across as a genuine guy, but the trouble is you've got to get the results, haven't you? And, you know, played 7-1-1 is not the sort of start that anybody at Leeds probably contemplated.
And you look at some of the games they've had, you know, London at home, you think he should be winning that. Warren away is obviously tough, Wigan's away is tough. But you look at, you know, they got fairly easily beat by Wigan, and that's the only game Wigan have won this season.
Let's turn this on its head a bit and talk about London, because they keep pulling out these results. Oh, and
phenomenal.
We're running out of things to say about them, aren't we?
They are proof that dedication, togetherness and morale can far outweigh class and skill.
And I'll tell you something about London. We've mentioned Jared Sammet now playing for Wigan. When Sammet left London in the close season, everybody thought, oh, crikey, you know, that's bad news for them. He's obviously one of their outstanding players, if not the outstanding player from last year. But this kid, Jordan Abdul, has been playing extremely well for them. And it goes back, doesn't it, to this... If you think about running a rugby league club, then one of the key skills of doing that is to recruit well. And to recruit, you know, not just you know, players who everybody knows who you pay a fortune to, but the smart people are those who can recruit a player who, you know, plays above his apparent value. I remember talking to Gary Hetherington at Leeds some years ago, who said that, you know, the art of doing well nowadays in a Super League, in a salary cap sport, is to sign players who play above their salary cap value. And you know, Abdul, I think, probably is doing, as are quite a few other London players. The thing that was really quite remarkable was that they were losing 16-8 with only about 7 minutes to go, weren't they? And they scored two tries in the last 10 minutes, you know, the last 7 minutes or so, and won the game. And it was back to that thing about Leeds' defence near their own line, either from, you know, dummy half or from kicks that, you know, dinked over the top. Leeds' defence is just pathetic, really, and that's what the coach needs to work on.
Their line defence is awful. They look scared. They look fearful when they're on their own line. But on London, I think one thing that really needs to be pointed out is Danny Ward's recruitment, because a lot of people rightly credit Darryl Powell for just unearthing gems. If you look at what Danny Ward's done, he lost players when he went in at the start of last season. They cut the budget in London. So they lost Will Bartow and they lost Andy Akers. And everyone thought, well, two big players. Brought through academy lads that he'd worked with. He then signs Eloire Pelissier, who has been tremendous. In the off-season, they lose Jared Sammet, who is seen as the star man. You think, oh no, they're in trouble. He then goes on to sign Jordan Abdul, who hadn't been given a chance to play half-back at Hull, really. If he'd played, he'd been on the bench or played at loose forward. He has been... His kicking game against Leeds, the way he controlled the game was just tremendous. Has been a brilliant signing. He signs Luke Yates from Newcastle Knights. Nobody had a clue this guy was. We were all rolling our eyes saying, oh, another average Aussie coming over. I think he's the second highest tackle maker in Super League currently, I believe.
Absolutely.
He's just extraordinary. Even Fozzard, he signed Matty Fozzard, who was at Sheffield last year. He comes in, and I thought, no way. Well, Matty Fozzard, I think, has got two tries and three assists playing off the bench. So his recruitment has just been absolutely fantastic.
You know, if you went back 10 to 15 years when Danny was playing, not many people would have picked him out as a potential top coach. You know, it didn't seem that sort of a guy. And yet he's, you know, absolutely killing it, isn't he?
Well, like we said, 4 points the gap now between the rest of the league and Wigan, Leeds and Huddersfield. Huddersfield were beaten at the weekend. St Helens make it 6-6 there. Can't really judge too much in that one. Huddersfield were beaten by a much better team.
Same issues for Huddersfield.
Yeah.
Played well in the first half but got rolled over in the second.
Yeah, and it keeps happening that. Mm. They keep having periods where they just know.
I thought they were outstanding at Wigan, actually, the week before. And, you know, if Huddersfield can play somebody who isn't quite as isn't in St Helens League. They play Hull Kingston Rovers this Friday night, for example.
It's a huge game.
And that's massive. Actually, massive for both clubs, because Hull Kingston Rovers would be very disappointed to have, you know, lost late on against Catalans at the weekend. They're on six, but they don't want to get dragged down into that relegation dogfight. So they need to win, and Huddersfield need to win much more. So it should be a pretty compelling game, I think.
There's another big game on Friday night, and that's Castleford against St Helens on TV. Castleford Tigers 24, Salford 20. Bit of a thriller in the jungle.
Yeah. I thought it said more about Salford than it did Cass. Salford, they're going to be competitive, aren't they? They are.
If they can avoid injuries.
They've got injuries at the minute, and they're still.
Yeah, but not to the key man. You know.
No. It's if Hastings or Louis go down.
Yeah. Yeah,
or Evald.
But we've seen a great discovery really with Salford this year in Jake Bibby, who was outstanding when he appeared for the first time against Catalans, and played well again apparently at Castleford, scored two tries in both games. So you know, players just looking to get a chance, and finally getting one and showing us what they can do. That's tremendous.
We talk about the injury. You know, that if injuries hit Salford, that's probably where the wheels might come off. So at the moment, they've got a couple of injuries.
But not to Hastings and Louis, you know.
If they beat Wigan this weekend, then some people in the Salford fan base might start thinking, you know what, we can make the playoffs there.
I think it's a tricky game for Salford this weekend against Wigan, because I'm fairly sure that Wigan will be really desperate to win. I think they'll be training very hard to try and get, you know, put this bad start behind them. And Salford, actually, in a curious way, Salford don't always seem to play as well at home as they do away. You know, I mean, that game in Perpignan when they absolutely slaughtered the Catalans was outstanding. And if they could play like that at home, I'm sure they'd be drawing great crowds and, you know, doing some great things. But, you know, they're the only team to have lost to Leeds, and Leeds beat them, I think it was 34-12 or something like that at the AJ Bell Stadium, you know, which looks an anomaly now when you look at that result.
Salford, though, were beaten by Castleford. Castleford against St Helens this weekend. That's a big game, that one, for Cass, isn't it?
Biggest game of the season so far, you would say.
Potentially, yeah.
You know, it's two of the pace setters. Saints are the only team that are unbeaten. I think Cass have looked very good. They look like they're going to be one of the biggest challengers.
Mm.
But I've got to say, at the minute, I do think that Saints and Warrington
are the two.
And Saints in particular being the best so far. I do think Warrington will come good. I said at the start of the year I thought it'd be Saints wire, and I've not seen a great deal to make me think otherwise yet.
Okie dokie. Well, we mentioned that gap that was opening up between the bottom and the mid-table pack. The mid-table pack is a bit bonkers, to say the least, in that fact anyone can beat anybody in that mid-table pack at the moment. Hull 12, Wakefield 32, Hull finally beaten. Thought it would never end. but there they are. Spot Sin binning in that match as well, 4-all. And Hull came back late in the first half. Wakefield stretched the legs in the second half. And it's Wakefield v Warrington on Thursday night.
But
on
how sad it was to see Tom Johnston coming off with an anterior cruciate ligament injury. That's the thing to take out of that game. You know, and it's absolutely tragic for the kid because he's been probably the most exciting winger in Super League so far this season. And it's now his second serious knee injury. He's going to be out for the whole year. It's just such bad luck. And, you know, Wakefield are now wondering how to replace him on that left wing. They may go for, you know, to recruit Mason Cate and Brown again, who they had on their books last year. And Mason, oddly enough, left Wakefield because he wasn't getting sufficient chances because Ben Jones Bishop and Tom Johnson were both playing so well. But, you know, and they've got Bill Tupou out this Thursday as well for the game against Warrington, which is really bad news for Wakefield because Tupou is magnificent. I mean, that, you know, that wing combination of Tupou and Johnston, it's the outstanding left-field combination with Matty Ashurst just inside them. It's the outstanding left-field combination in the game at the moment, or has been. And, of course, we won't see that again this season now.
Is that going to be crucial, do you think, for Thursday night's game against Warrington? Because that on paper...
In a word,
If we're talking Wakefield a couple of weeks ago, that's a big banana skin that for Warrington.
Johnston is tremendous. I think Tupou's the bigger miss. So, yeah, I think they'll really, really miss Bill Tupou.
Well, let's talk about Catalans, and this is what we're talking about, making head and tail of this mid-table pack. Catalans defeating Hull KR. Why not? 18 points to 16. I think McNamara will just be glad of the points rather than the performance, anything like that, given the previous outing before that one.
Yeah, correct. I didn't see the game, so I can't comment a great deal. That Joel Tompkins try was outrageous. Brilliant try. They'll be happy to win on the road. They will be happy because they were way off in the first couple of away games. You know, they were nowhere near.
Big game this weekend on Saturday. Catalans against Leeds Rhinos.
Big game for both clubs, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just to say, I mean, I was saying how topsy-turvy the division is. There's five teams there all on 6 points in mid-table. You do feel if Catalans get a win over Leeds and stretched out to a three-win gap, that's pretty seismic, isn't it, at this stage of the season?
It would be, yeah. As we say, it's a big game for both clubs, probably even bigger for Leeds, although the Catalans need to restore the confidence of their fans who had to sit through that shellacking by Salford. So I think they'll be desperately keen to win that game. I think it could be a much more difficult game to predict than many people would seem to be suggesting. I don't think Leeds will be far away from winning it. I'm not sure whether I'd tip them to win it, but, you know, I think they could do. And, you know, you just can't be sure, can you, at the moment?
Now, it's interview time, and on Monday I caught up with Stephen Ratchford from Warrington last season's Albert Goldthorpe winning player, and I spoke to him on Monday, and I started off by asking Stephen for his thoughts on Friday's win over Wigan.
Yeah, it was a good performance, Ben. You know, we was pretty good for, you know, the majority of the game. I'd probably say up, you know, the first 50, 55 minutes, I thought we were really good and laid a really good platform for ourselves. Obviously, we was disappointed, you know, with that 10, 15-minute spell that we had, you know, and kind of let Wigan back in the game. But on the flip side of that, you know, some of that's credit to Wigan as well. They're a quality side, and I think they showed some signs at the weekend that they're just in a bit of a, you know, a bit of a rut and a bit of a blip at the moment, and it won't be long until they get out of it.
Well, it's in stark contrast to the mood at Warrington, it feels like. I mean, we're six games into the season, just one defeat, and the vibe and the mood at the club is a very good atmosphere at the moment.
Yeah, we're in a pretty good spot at the moment. I mean, it was difficult last year with, you know, the start of the year that we had. You know, we was in probably a similar situation to Wigan. I think we was about two from six at the beginning. And we had, you know, a lot of turnover in coaches and players and that sort of stuff. So we kind of felt when we first come back this year that we was, you know, probably a couple of steps ahead of where we was at this point last year. So obviously through the year last year we built quite well and ended up obviously in the finals. You know, we came up short in them games, but you know we got to both the finals, which was a good sign. And like I said, we've just kind of progressed from there and probably started a bit further ahead of that than where we was at this point last year.
And what do you make of the competition this year? I mean, yourselves and St Helens and Castleford and even Salford and Wakefield and the like all started off quite well, and feels like a very fierce competition this year.
I think it is, and I think that's been kind of the trend over the last few years. You know, it was, you know, going back a couple of years ago, it was the traditional, you know, you had your three, four, five teams who could win it, and everyone else was just kind of, you know, taking part, I suppose. But, you know, the last few years, I think it's really improved, you know, where there's numerous teams now, not only pushing for top of the league, you know, it's the playoff spots, and it's, you know, there's a lot of results happening the last few years where, you know, you necessarily wouldn't have expected a few years ago. So I think it's great. I think it's great for, you know, great for the spectators who are watching. You know, you never kind of know what sort of results are going to come week to week. So I think it's great for the sport. And, you know, like I say, it makes you know, interesting viewing for the neutrals as well, who, you know, you can't pick a team. It's kind of anybody's game each week.
Absolutely. And for you personally as well, I mean, Martin came to Warrington last week to award you Albert Goldthorpe medal for last season. And you've had a great start to the season as well, carrying on from last year.
Yeah, that was nice last week to pick up the medal. You know, it's always nice to be recognised, you know, and pick up the personal awards. But, you know, on the back of that, you know, I've got to give credit to, obviously, I know it sounds a bit cliche, but, you know, to all my teammates. Obviously, we're in a team sport, and if the team performs well, and, you know, it kind of makes you want to perform well, and, you know, I suppose people pick up, you know, the individual awards on the back of that. But, yeah, we're, you know, like you said before, the vibe around the club, we're a real, it's all about the team. So, you know, it's the team first mentality, and, you know, anything that comes on the back of that is a nice bonus. But, yeah, to the start of this year, I think, I said it the other day, I think, you know, after the first two rounds last year, I had two absolute shockers, and I was ready for retiring. So to start on the front foot this year has been nice. But we know we've, you know, myself personally and as a team, we've still got areas to improve, and we're still looking forward to things we can do better and all that sort of stuff. So hopefully we can kind of continue the momentum as, you know, playing well as individuals, which will, like I say, in turn make the team play well.
And you certainly can't retire just yet, because Great Britain and Ireland tour at the end of the year. Are you up for that one as well, if selected?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's you know, any international recognitions are, you know, it's a massive thing for me. It's something I'll always want to do. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough over the last few years to be on a few tours with England, and, you know, the Four Nations and the World Cup down under, and, you know, a couple of tours over here as well. So anytime you're involved in them sort of camps, it's always a very special occasion. But, yeah, to see Great Britain back, that's, you know, it's massive. I think there's been quite a bit of negative publicity around it, and people saying, well, why not just do this and why not do that? But I think if you speak to any player, you know, for me growing up, Great Britain was the pinnacle, and it's what you wanted to achieve. And back when I was watching, England was, I think it was, like a step down from Great Britain. So Great Britain was always kind of like the dream to play for. So obviously that would be, you know, kind of momentous if you could get picked in that. But on the flip side, there's a lot of competition for not many spaces. So yeah, we're going to have to, like I say, as individuals and as a team, we're going to have to keep performing well, and hopefully, you know, some joy with the recognition might come on the back of that.
And finally, this weekend, Wakefield on Thursday night. I mean, we've already touched upon the competition, but that's going to be a very, very important game, and we're only seven games in.
Yeah, it's a massive game. You know, whenever you go to Wakefield, you know, it's always a tough task. They're a quality side. You know, the attacking players they've got, I mean, we've spoke about it already. I think the last few years we've been there, I think, you know, quite a few of the games have been a 42, 36 and 38, 34. You know, they're always high scoring games, and that's down to the quality attack they've got. Obviously, you know, Chris Jester and the coaches there are doing a fantastic job. You know, and obviously they've got some quality players in there. So we know it's going to be, you know, a massive test for us on Thursday. And, you know, we can go there and pick up the win. It'll, you know, like I say, it's only seven games in, but, you know, it might be a big 2 points come the end of the year.
So, Stephen Ratchford there joining us on this week's Total Rugby League show, and that's like we said in the build-up, really, he's cracking lad. And
absolutely, thoroughly deserved the Albert Goldthorpe medal last year, and he's going to be very competitive again this year, and also in the Man of Steel award, because, you know, they've changed the rules and that suits players like him, I think. You know, players who can do brilliant things on the pitch, players who can, you know, run down the pitch from full back and so on. So, you know, players who play in the spine. So, you know, it's going to be interesting for him.
Absolutely. Well, let's have a bit of a championship roundup before we talk about the other big stories this week. Toronto bounce back against Batley. To lose Sheffield and York, they'll keep the pressure on in the championship. Widnes are now on -2, everybody, and look like the playoffs are on. They don't lose many more games this season. Bit of a dramatic one as well against Bradford at the weekend. And it's back-to-back wins for Featherstone and Lee. In League One, Hunslet make it 3-3 and a great win. Just put your arm down, Matthew. Just come to you when I'm ready. A great win for Whitehaven over Doncaster. And Keighley at the Scholars came from behind to take a point there.
Any of those amateur clubs get through in the Challenge Cup?
No, they didn't. Siddle were very unlucky at Workington, I believe.
Right. Thanks for coming.
But League One, though, there's only one news story to talk about, really. And that's Hunslet. No, I'm only joking. Dennis Betts.
Yes.
Long predicted. In these very publications.
Very ambitious club, Newcastle Thunder. And
is this a signal of intent now? I know we've said this for a few years, that Newcastle Thunder, very, very ambitious. But they are, you know, with the community work, the academy stuff, the youth development, the universities, the ground, they are putting where their mouth is.
Newcastle Thunder have got the potential to be a Super League club, and it's a genuine potential. You know, they've got great facilities, they're attached to a Premiership rugby union club, it's great up there, and I think Dennis Betts, when he will have gone up to meet the people at the club, will have been very impressed by what he saw there. Not just that, there are lots and lots of junior clubs now bursting out in the Newcastle area, in the northeast of England. It's becoming, you know, you might say it's becoming a heartland area for rugby league.
Not just that as well, the North East Cup draw took place, and Edinburgh, now they were in that cup last year, now in the league structure in the North East. Glasgow have got a team in that cup competition as well.
That's,
and it's
great,
all being
it?
Spurred on by Newcastle.
It's great, isn't it? You know, and you know, I hope Dennis is successful at Newcastle. I'm sure he will be. I think he's a very smart guy. I think he went through a difficult time at Widnes because of the Widnes, you know, never had any money to be able to recruit properly when he was there. Although in the early days of his time there, I think he did very well with them and, you know, got them going well in Super League. But I think he's the right man for the job.
I agree. I think that you can draw comparisons between where Widnes were when Dennis went in and where Newcastle are. They're obviously a division below, but he wanted to build from the bottom, from within. I think Newcastle have plans to do that in the long term with their school structure and get an academy going and so on and so forth. So I think Dennis will understand how to implement that. He's obviously got a proven track record as being a good coach. I thought he was really criminally criticised at Widnes. Don't think he had a squad that was competitive in the final 2 years, and that was proven in results.
And it was proven when he left. You know, they actually got worse. Yeah,
they got worse. So yeah. I think, and he's got good contacts. He's got good contacts, and will be able to get good players in. So for me, I think it is a really good appointment. I think it's a good appointment for him. It's a project which I think it suits him.
At what stage of the project do you think we're at now? Because it's kind of a little mini stumble the last couple of years on the pitch while they've been busy exceeding themselves off it. Where are we in the project?
I think the last few years on the pitch were a bit irrelevant because I think they needed to get it right off the pitch. And I think they're in a position now where they've got it right enough off the pitch that they can look to progress to the championship. So for me, the project is on track, but they have to go up this year to not fall behind on it. So that's
a big ask, though, isn't it? This year
is a big ask. It is a big ask, but I'm sure we'll go on to it. We've talked of New York
and
a Canadian team coming in. You would have to say that this is potentially the best opportunity for any club to go up.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll come back to that in a second. On a Newcastle point of view, but we should talk about North America. And we started the show off talking about statements. And the RFL made a statement about North America and New York and a other link with the Hemel license.
Yeah, they're going to allow them to present to the clubs, aren't they? The Championship and League One clubs.
I have a question. Why is that not standard? If I'm just thinking back a few months ago, the Manchester Rangers situation.
Precisely.
There's if they tick the right boxes, and it then ultimately comes to a Q&A session with the clubs and the chairman.
Extraordinary. If I were Manchester Rangers, I would be very, very angry about all of this. You know, because they seem to me to be a club that was really well set up and had potentially quite a lot to offer in a city that's very important for rugby league, you know, where the headquarters of the game are going to move to. So why they were treated so shabbily, I'm not quite sure.
Can I make a very cynical suggestion?
You may.
Not that you ever normally do.
No.
No, but he's asked permission this time.
Yeah.
Does the RFL think that there won't be enough clubs that will vote through either of these clubs and therefore are putting the onus on them to make the decision? Look at the way the statement was worded. It came across to me as the RFL saying, well, we'd like it, but it's up to the clubs. Therefore taking all of the pressure off themselves. That is me purely speculating.
The actual North American idea, though, it looks like from an RFL angle, you know, this is an RFL discussion. But ultimately, these clubs who are joining the structure want to get into Super League, and we've got more tiers of bureaucracy here that need to be addressed as well. Because if you're going to have somebody like the Toronto owner at New York or at another club, they want to know that they're going to get a return in 10 years, don't they?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I would think so. I mean, they would look... If they're serious people, they'll look very hard at the way the RFL is organised and the way it markets and promotes the game and so on. And I can only imagine they'd be a bit disappointed by what they see, because we all are, aren't we, really, in some respects. That, you know, the RFL is a very small organisation trying to run a sport that's potentially going to be a big sport covering several different countries. That's a big ask, actually, for anyone. And, you know, the RFL needs to find ways to generate more money to employ more staff.
Is this where Andy Mays' comments come in the League Express this week and the Barrow chairman a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, it is crying out for more impetus, isn't it? And if that comes from the clubs themselves, then...
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens in football. You've got the English Football League, the Premier League and the FA and they all...
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think my stance on the two clubs, I'm massively for expansion. I will defend Toronto to the hilt, as everyone's probably well aware. I'm not sure two coming in at the same time is a right idea. You've got to consider the fact that they'll probably go in at League One. For me, when the league structure
should
was
they
set
come
up,
in, should they come in at League One? Because have Toronto done the job well enough for those North American clubs not have to break enough eggs?
I'm not sure. I don't see how you could put them in at Championship level.
No, I don't think the clubs would stand for putting them in at Championship level.
The problem is they're not going to expand the Championship to 16 teams. And you can't just say, right, those two are going up. No one's going up from League One.
They really, you know...
Can't do
isn't this a shame that we didn't do the league restructure next season then, where
well,
we could...
What's a shame is that we didn't put the Super League up to 14 clubs, in my view, because you've got the top two clubs in the Championship at the moment are Toronto and Toulouse. Now, you know, only one of those could get promoted this year, but let's imagine it is one of those two, and then next year it's the other one. You know, you're going to then have three overseas clubs in Super League, potentially with only nine English clubs. I don't think that's enough for the television companies. I would go to 14.
I'm still firm of the belief that come the new television deal, it'll be 14 teams in Super League. And what will happen is if two clubs come in, I personally, there's no foundation to this opinion. It's just my opinion. Only one will come in. They will get promoted, and then they will have that year to try and get in in what there'll be more promotion places available for an expanded Super League. That's what I see happening.
And this is why I was going to come back to Newcastle at this point, because at that point, in you know, if we've got these two North American clubs, yep, we've got the likes of Newcastle. Goodness knows where Bradford will be at that point. Maybe even,
well, hopefully contending.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. That's why I mentioned them. And York and in their new stadium, and who knows else, all competing to try and get to the Super League. I mean, it's going to be very congested and hectic, isn't it?
It's really interesting looking at the Championship table now. You've got Toronto and Toulouse at the top. But level with Toulouse are two teams that you might not have expected at the start of the season, Sheffield Eagles and York City Knights, who have both got 10 points from six games, just one defeat each, and they play each other this weekend, don't they?
Yeah.
That's going to be a hell of a game. And Sheffield Eagles, I think, deserve an enormous amount of credit for having been so competitive so far this season. You know, how Mark Aston does it, I just don't know. He manages to put a team... It goes back to what we were saying earlier in the show about recruitment, and Aston seems to have a sort of instinctive understanding of how to recruit.
He's great to interview as well.
Oh, he really is. You just ask him how you're doing, and that's it, interview done.
He goes on, yeah.
I think the person who credited Sheffield for being playoff contenders deserves credit, Ben.
Hmm.
Yeah, indeed. But what I was trying to get at there was the fact that, you know, the RFL mentioned in their statement that they've got this plan.
Yeah,
it does need a plan, because there is going to get awfully competitive in the next couple of years for those Super League spots.
I think they have a plan that they've not told anyone in case it goes wrong with these expansion teams. For me, I was reading between the lines when the league was restructured. 11 teams in League One, that was never going to be a long-term thing.
Mm.
There was a reason why it was an odd number, because there was a club coming in the year after. That's still why I think there'll be 12, only one team coming in. Could it expand to 14 long-term? Yeah, I think long-term, I think you're looking at 3 14s, but I'm talking probably at least 5 years until that.
Mm.
But yeah, I think there is a plan. I think they know what they're going for, and I think that includes a 14-team Super League in 2022.
Now, we are running out of time, but we do mention a plan there. Have they got a plan for reserve grade rugby?
Goodness knows.
Why have you brought this up?
Because it's mentioned in the paper. This show's about the paper. I'm mentioning stuff that's in the paper. And, you know, Lee Greenwood said something this week, and I think St Helens and Wigan couldn't get a reserve match or necessarily sanctioned. The RFL needs to say what the
plan
is.
Yeah, we're doing it, at least at Super League level. And the sooner the better, in my view. I mean, I just find it ridiculous, really, that so many Super League players, so many young Super League players, are popping up for Championship and League One clubs all over the place on a one-off basis. And I just hate it. You know, there was somebody tweeted last week, a Featherstone Rovers fan, saying that, you know, Featherstone, I think, were on the front page or one of the major pages of League Express a couple of weeks ago.
They
lost to Widnes. Yeah. And he said, I looked at those players, those Featherstone players, and they're both Leeds players. He says, you know, I'm not supporting them again or something until they're genuine Featherstone players. I think it upsets fans to see players who don't really belong to a club edging out players who are, you know,
I mean, I think
genuine players.
We should say we're not necessarily criticising Ryan Carr or Featherstone Rovers, because if those players are available, why wouldn't you have them in
your team? I say this
all
the time when I moan about Joe Reg. I do not blame any one individual coach for doing it, because if the players are available to you and it's a results-based industry, I completely understand.
And from the point of view of the club who's letting its players go to a club in the lower league, they're getting playing time for their, for their players. So you can't blame them. You can't blame anybody for taking advantage of a structure that's allowed as part of, you know, the RFL rules.
Agreed.
But you know, and you're still seeing. I was talking to somebody earlier this week who was saying, you know, that he's aware of a player with one major club who has had one game in 9 weeks. You know, because he just is not being picked for the first team and so on.
And if they had a reserve grade, that wouldn't be an issue.
No.
It's a nice midweek game where you can open up the stadium, get some people in the badge. I mean,
even playing a midweek nines competition would help in that regard.
But this is where the RFL does need to step in and say, you've all got to do it.
The thing that winds me up, Ben, is that they all say money. Lee Greenwood made a great point. If you said to the clubs, right, we've got the salary cap, you've got your salary cap, the final 5%, 10%, you can only use that if you're running a reserve grade. I guarantee you that every single club, other than maybe Salford, who don't spend up to cap, every single club in Super League would find the money for a reserve grade.
And the thing that I would like to see us do is to reduce the quota. You know, it's 5 at the moment, put it down to 4, with the aim in the long term of putting it down to 2. You know, we need to develop our own players, don't we? But, you know, take it down to 4 at first, you know, with plenty of notice. And then ultimately, every 2 or 3 years, reduce it by another 1.
I won't be opposed to it, but I don't think you can allow the quality of the competition to drop. And not in the long term, but I think if you're getting it down to 2, for me, you're looking at a generation of players. You're looking at reserve grade coming in and then a full gen. So you're looking 10, 15 years before you can get it down to that, realistically.
Well, possibly, but even so, I think we should still be aiming to do it.
We'll come back to that in 10 years' time.
That's
nearly it for this week's show. As we said, totalrl.com, the place to go for all breaking news with regards to rugby league. But just before we go, a couple of parish notices. Back chat on Thursday.
Yeah, Steve Ganson's on.
It was really excellent.
Good.
Yeah, he was.
Did you mention Rooks and play of the ball?
Yeah, good. It was. We spoke about a lot of things. In fact, we ran out of time in the end, didn't we?
We did. Yeah, we did. It was in a way, but you know, I think it'll be a really good show.
Yeah,
that's on Thursday at 5 o'clock for Free Sport.
Right? Yeah,
and anything else coming up in the paper this week and in various? You've got another week before the magazine's out, haven't you?
Yeah, we are working extremely hard on it at the minute. There will be a big story in League Express on Monday, but I can't say anything else because it'll...
They're all big stories, Matthew.
Yeah, but no, yeah. But
but a
it'll
big, big.
It'll give other people the sniff, so I'm keeping my mouth shut.
We've got a guarantee from Sean Edwards that he's going to be the new editor of League Express.
I hope you get it right next
year.
2020.
Well, on that note, that is the end of this week's Total Rugby League Show. A big thank you to Martin Sadler, Matthew Shaw, always a pleasure. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.